midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
Some hauntings don't arrive with footsteps, whispers, or even a warning. Some slip in the way a temperature drops or the way your instincts suddenly insist that something is just wrong. And sometimes the thing that crosses that invisible line between maybe I imagined it and I know I'm not alone isn't a ghost at all. It's something darker, stranger, something that acts as if it's been watching you far longer than you've noticed it. For him, the first encounter came at 15 during one of the strangest and most vulnerable stretches of his life. A kid from England, suddenly uprooted, dropped into the dry heat and bright plazas of Spain, separated from his parents while they finished selling their home. He was sent ahead to live with his aunt, meant to keep up with school, meant to settle in early, meant to adapt. But nothing about that season felt like adapting. His cousin, spoiled and territorial, made every day a kind of pressure cooker. His aunt believed every lie her son spun, even accusing him of stealing a large sum of money he'd never even known existed. He was isolated, overwhelmed, and 1,600 miles from everything familiar. And that, he says now, is probably why the first shadow found him. He remembers lying in the unfamiliar bed one night, staring into the dark, unable to sleep because his mind wouldn't stop spinning. And then something shifted. Not in the room, not in the air, but inside him a drop, a slip, like the moment before a fainting spell or the moment when a nightmare hijacks your sense of control. Except this wasn't sleep, he was wide awake. And suddenly he couldn't move. He tried. God, he tried, but his limbs felt sealed in cement. His breath stuttered shallow, and all that still worked were his eyes and his mind. Both of which told him immediately that he wasn't alone. In his mind's eye, he saw a hand. Not a normal hand. The image was too jagged, too long, fingers ending in something that looked like claws curling toward his face. He panicked hard enough that his heartbeat filled his ears, and he remembers thinking, I am going to die here, in this bed, in this house where no one likes me enough to believe me. He kept fighting the paralysis until finally, with a small, painful jolt, he broke free and lunged for the light switch. The light didn't come on. He hit it again. Nothing. And that's when he saw it. A shadow, not cast on the wall, but separate from the darkness around it, slipping through the window. It moved like smoke and something solid all at once, swirling low across the floor, and then a voice, deep and bodiless, spoke into the room as though the walls themselves had learned to speak. Just two words, repeated three times. The twins, the twins. The twins. The air grew so cold it felt like static on his skin. He said he could feel the shadow looking at him, examining him, and the only word he has ever found to describe the sensation is evil. Pure, unfiltered evil, like something from a place that didn't resemble humanity in any way. And then, as quickly as it had come, the shadow rushed upward, sucked through the ceiling like smoke pulled through a chimney. The pressure snapped. The paralysis broke, and the light flicked on as easily as if nothing had happened. That was the first time, but it wasn't the last. For the next 6 months, the shadows stalked him in ways that were subtle at first. Every afternoon, he walked home from school during siesta, those hours when entire towns seem to turn their faces away from the sun, when nothing moves. When streets feel abandoned, even though you know people are asleep behind the shutters. And every day on that walk, he felt someone behind him. Not someone nearby, someone pacing him. He'd turn, expecting a person, any person. But the street was always empty. And yet within seconds, the feeling crept back like a breath warming the hairs on the back of his neck. Several times he thought he caught a sliver of something dark sliding just out of the corner of his vision. Nothing he could describe, nothing he could prove, but always there. And then the attack started. It began with pressure, not physical, but in a place most people don't even have language for. First between his eyes, like fingers pressing down on his forehead, then at his temples, as if invisible hands were trying to pry something open. His whole body would tingle, then vibrate, then feel like it was searing with heat from the inside out. His vision would blur, the world turning pale like the edges of heat stroke. And then, this was always the moment it escalated, he would feel his soul, not metaphorically, but literally, start to lift. Not float, not drift, rise, like something was trying to pull him up and out of his own body. He would fight, terrified, anchoring himself in any way he could, mentally grabbing onto thoughts, memories, anything that felt alive and real. And just when he'd think it couldn't get worse, the presence would arrive. He never saw it during these moments, not clearly, but he felt it. A wave of cold that wasn't temperature. A pressure in the dark, something ancient and cruel settling into the space beside him. Sometimes he heard it mutter, words he couldn't understand, like someone whispering through a wall of thick glass. And then the pain hit. A chest pain so sharp and crushing that he thought genuinely that he was having a heart attack at 15, a pain like a hand made of ice squeezing his heart from the inside. A stabbing sensation between his ribs like a blade of frozen metal. Once it happened in broad daylight, in a school hallway crowded with laughing students. One moment he was standing, listening to a friend talk about class. The next, something rushed toward him at impossible speed and the ice knife slammed into his chest. He collapsed to his knees, gasping. His friend later told him he'd gone completely white, like someone had pulled the blood out of his skin. And then, as always, it passed. No trace, no marks, no explanation. And then, he moved. His parents finally arrived in Spain and they found a home of their own. And the moment he left his aunt's house, the attacks stopped. No more shadows trailing him. No more paralysis. No more icy hands reaching for the part of him. Nothing should ever be able to touch. For a long time, he believed it was over. But shadows don't always let go. Some of them wait. Some of them watch from the places you stop looking. And when life cracks open again, when you're wounded, exhausted, vulnerable, they know how to find their way back. That's where the second part of his story begins. For more than a decade, the shadows left him alone. He built a life, grew older, tried to tuck the memories of Spain into the corners of his mind where strange things go to gather dust. And for a while it worked. He lived like someone who had escaped a storm, grateful for every ordinary day that didn't feel like a battleground. But life has a way of circling back to your weakest points. He hit bottom in his mid-20s, not in one catastrophic moment, but through the slow drag of heartbreak after heartbreak, disappointment stacking like sandbags around him. His last breakup had gutted him. He'd poured himself into training for the London Marathon as a way to outrun the grief. But halfway through the race, a brutal injury snapped that lifeline, too. 6 months on crutches, plans derailed, dreams cracked right down the middle. He felt isolated, frustrated, and worn dangerously thin. All the old vulnerabilities, the ones the shadows had once fed on, began creeping back into him like roots working through cracked pavement. And that's when the shadows returned. It didn't start with an attack. It started with a feeling, a sense that someone or something was drawing close again, watching from the edges of his routine. That familiar prickle that had vanished years before resurfaced one evening as he lay in bed, staring at the ceiling, trying to ignore the ache in his injured leg. He closed his eyes for a second, and then his body went still. Not from sleep, not from exhaustion, from paralysis. His mind snapped awake instantly. He knew the sensation too well. Couldn't move. Couldn't turn his head. Couldn't shift a finger. The room hummed with a faint vibration, like the air was beginning to thicken. And then, as if someone had stepped into the space behind his eyes, something pushed against him. Not physically, but psychically. Spiritually. It was the same pressure he'd felt as a teenager, that eerie attempt to pry him out of himself as if his consciousness were something detachable. He tried to summon the usual panic response, but his body stayed locked, frozen between breaths. And then the visions began, not shadows, not whispers, but scenes, graphic, brutal scenes, like someone was forcing him to watch a movie made of nightmares, violence, torture, acts of cruelty, so vile his mind rebelled against the images. Children in danger, people screaming, things no human should witness, especially not without warning. He wanted to turn away, to shut it out, but the paralysis held him still. The visions kept coming, swelling in intensity, pressing at the edges of his sanity. And the entire time, he could feel a presence just behind the imagery, as if the shadow responsible was standing at his shoulder, watching how he reacted, feeding on the fear curling through him. It happened again the next night, and the night after, and the night after that. Sometimes the images were violent, sometimes they were more personal. He saw himself wounded, bleeding, suffering injuries he'd never experienced. He saw versions of reality twisted through a lens of threat, as if something wanted him to believe harm was inevitable, not metaphorically, but literally. He went to the doctor, told him about the paralysis, the visions, the dizziness, the near blackouts. The doctor sent him for tests, worried about epilepsy or a neurological disorder CAT scan. Blood work, monitoring, every test came back clean. The doctor told him to reduce stress, sleep more, avoid overexertion. But how do you sleep when sleep is where you're hunted? And the paralysis episodes were one thing, but the stalking started again too, just like Spain. He'd walk down a street alone and get that unmistakable sensation of being followed. He'd glance back and see nothing, but the certainty remained, pressing against his ribs like a second heartbeat. He'd catch shadows slipping at the corners of mirrors, just static movements, vague outlines. He'd look again, and they'd be gone. But the feeling would stay. One night he woke with the sense that someone was standing at the foot of his bed. He didn't see anything, but he felt it. Cold. Heavy. Curious in a way that felt predatory, like something was considering him the way a wild animal evaluates prey. Eventually, he reached a point where exhaustion became dangerous. His body needed rest, but his mind revolted against closing his eyes. He realized slowly and painfully that the shadows weren't just tormenting him. They were wearing him down, softening him, making him pliable. Whatever they wanted from him, this was how they tried to get it. And then he did something he never imagined doing. He confronted them. He'd noticed over the years that mirrors were where the shadows gathered most visibly. Bathrooms, hallways, the full-length mirror in his bedroom. Reflections seemed to pick up what his eyes couldn't. So one night when twilight dimmed the room and shadows were just beginning to blend into the walls, he positioned a chair in front of the mirror, sat down and stared at his reflection. He let his vision unfocus, let the edges blur until the mirror stopped showing a human shape and started showing the void behind it. A subtle shift, a trick of the eyes, but familiar enough to him that he knew he was close. Close to whatever world the shadows used to peer through. And then he spoke. His voice shook at first, but he forced the words out because fear had already chewed through too many years of his life. "I'm not afraid of you anymore," he said to the empty mirror. "I know you can't hurt me. You only have power if I'm afraid. If I stop fearing you, you stop winning." He repeated it again and again. Not screaming, not demanding, just insisting. Stating a truth he willed himself to believe. And something changed. The cold around him loosened, the sensation of being watched thinned. The mirror didn't show a figure, but the pressure behind it eased the way a storm retreats from a shoreline. And then, for the second time in his life, the shadows disappeared. No paralysis, no images, no stalking, and nothing. For years afterward, he lived as though whatever had tormented him had finally grown bored or been forced back into whatever dimension it crawled from. But the story wasn't over. Because years later, in a quiet house in Ireland, lying in bed beside his wife, the shadows returned. Only this time, they weren't malevolent. This time, the presence that stepped into the hallway felt something entirely different. Something curious. Something almost neutral. Something that didn't want to steal or scare, but to watch. and that moment would change everything he thought he understood about the shadows. Ireland was supposed to be a fresh start, a quieter chapter, a place where life settled into soft routines, warm lights, cool nights, and the kind of peace that makes you forget you've ever been afraid of the dark. For years, the shadows had left him alone. So long, in fact, that he began believing he'd outgrown them. That maybe the encounters in Spain were the byproduct of youth and trauma. That the visions in adulthood were the result of stress and broken bones and too many nights spent wrestling with loneliness. He didn't dismiss what he'd lived through, but he placed it in a box, a mental archive labeled past life, and breathed easier for it. Then, one night, as he and his wife were settling into bed, that illusion shattered. They weren't asleep yet, they weren't even close, the curtains were drawn, the room dim, the soft hum of the house settling around them. It was the kind of moment where the world feels safely predictable. And then his wife grabbed his arm, and it wasn't gentle, it wasn't curious. It was the grip of someone who's just heard something impossible. "Listen," she whispered. He froze. At first he thought she meant a burglar was on the stairs, and his mind jumped into instant physical panic. Intruders, break-ins, fight or flight, all the human fears a person expects from real life. But then she clarified in a trembling voice, I heard rattling, like a gourd, and footsteps, and someone breathing. Her face was pale in the dim light, eyes wide fixed on the closed bedroom door that led out to the top of the staircase. A rattlesnake sound, a spirit rattle, a hiss so soft she barely heard it over her own heartbeat. He held his breath and listened. At first, nothing. But then, a temperature drop, sudden, sharp, a wave of cold that seeped under the door like fog rolling off an invisible sea. The air shifted so dramatically his skin prickled. And he recognized it instantly. It was a shadow. Not the kind that hunted him as a teenager, not the kind that tried to pry his soul loose in his 20s. But unmistakably, one of them. A presence ancient, alien, and colder than any natural draft. But this time, there was something else woven into the sensation. Something he'd never felt from a shadow before. Curiosity. The steps on the other side of the door were soft, almost hesitant, as though the entity was taking its time exploring each creaking board of the hallway. It paused directly in front of the bedroom door, and although the wood remained closed, he felt it, felt eyes on him, studying him with a still inhuman focus. His wife clutched his arm, breath tight. He didn't see anything, but in his mind's eye, the figure appeared anyway, unbidden. A robed, hooded outline made of living darkness, blurred around the edges like smoke, not fully formed, but defined enough to feel present. And he felt a pull, not a physical tug, more like an invitation. A silent urging to get up, open the door, step into the hallway, and face whatever was waiting there. It wasn't malicious this time. It wasn't trying to terrify him. It simply wanted him to come closer. His body refused. Fear held him down like a weighted blanket. Earlier in his life, that fear had been a weapon shadows used against him. But this time, the fear was purely human. The instinctual terror of approaching something you can't categorize. The presence lingered for several minutes, long enough for him to feel every second, long enough for the cold to settle into the room like it was trying to make space for itself. And then, slowly, almost reluctantly, it retreated. The cold thinned. The pressure in the room lifted. His heartbeat began to normalize. He could breathe again. His wife whispered, "It's leaving." They both rushed to the window just in time to see a shadow, an actual shadow, pass across the yard. It glided across the grass, blocking the glow of the neighbors' lights as it moved. Not like a person casting a shadow, like something dense enough to obscure the world behind it. It drifted out of view. The yard lights brightened again, and the presence dissipated until nothing remained. But he knew what he'd felt, and it changed him. For years, he'd believed shadows were evil, demonic, parasitic entities that fed on trauma, fear, vulnerability. He'd lived through the terror, the paralysis, the visions that no human mind is built to endure. But now he'd encountered something different. A shadow with no malice, no agenda he could sense, only interest. It was like meeting a wild animal in the dark woods, not a predator stalking prey, but something that simply wanted to understand what he was. And that raised questions he had never allowed himself to consider. What if shadows weren't one species? What if they weren't all hostile? What if they weren't even spirits in the traditional sense? What if some were older, stranger, life forms existing just outside our reality? He couldn't shake the feeling that he'd been observed the way a person might observe a rare phenomenon. Not hunted, not haunted, studied. And yet, he couldn't shake the other memories either. The malice, the pain, the psychological assaults from years before. Two extremes, two types. Both made of darkness, but nothing alike. It left him with questions that gnawed at the edges of his thoughts. What exactly are shadow people? Are they astral predators? Are they sentient beings from another dimension? Are they dead? And are they alive? Do they choose people the way people might choose to study certain animals? He didn't have the answers. No one does. Not the paranormal investigators, not the folklore experts, not the spiritualists who claimed to understand the unseen, but he knew this. He had met both the worst and the best of them. He had been hunted and he had been watched. He had been terrorized and he had been regarded with neutral curiosity. And out of all the experiences, all the nights of paralysis and dread, all the moments when he felt his consciousness slipping away under someone else's will, the encounter in Ireland was the one that still haunted him the most. Because deep down he sensed the truth. Some shadows feed on fear. Some shadows feed on weakness. Some shadows feed on nothing at all, but all of them see us. And some, for reasons he'll probably never understand, are drawn to us. He still wonders sometimes, what would have happened if he'd opened that door?
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now, so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.